Even infidelity is workable.
On whose side?
All right, welcome to a podcast about nothing with V.
AD.
We're excited today, y'all.
We got one of my favorites on today.
Yo, AD has been waiting for this interview forever. Okay, we didn't even know if we were going to get the interview. We said, okay, who we want to interview? Adrian was like, oh, I want to interview Pastor Cal. I ain't gonna lie, I said, who?
I had to put everybody on. I'm telling you.
she said, you know, Married at First Sight, because I didn't watch those shows. Now I am hooked. Today's guest is a true honor, a true blessing, and an inspiration. Awarded the Innovative Award in D.C. by the YMCA, author of the critically acclaimed book, The Gospel of Nonsense, featured in Lifetime, Access Hollywood, Ebony, People, New York Post, ET, Daily Mail, and FYI. You know him as the relationship expert on Married at First Sight and Bride and Prejudice, Forbidden Love. Love that show, by the way. And you also know not to make him take off his glasses. Pastor Cal.
What's up? Oh, whatever. Hey, what's up, guys?
How's your quarantine going, first and foremost?
Oh, it's, you know what? We're trying to have fun. We're trying to make something out of it. You know, it's crazy being locked up in the house like this, you know. And it's not so much that we can't go outside, but it's like, where are you going to go? So we'll make our occasional runs to the store, and then we'll come back and try to get a lot of writing done and, you know, just chilling.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I'm finding that we're having a lot of couples, though, that we're doing a lot of counseling now.
I can believe it. You're locked in the house with somebody 24/7. It's like, ooh.
Yeah. People are losing their minds.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
So we're trying to help people out, help some folk out.
So did you always see yourself as a pastor and a relationship expert?
Oh my God. You know, it's funny because I was talking to my mom. My mom is 99 years old.
Amen.
as of 4 weeks ago. She turned 99. And I mean, still bright, still, you know, sharp. She's still got it going on. And she said, you know, I never knew you were going to be a pastor. She said, when you went to college, because my background is art, I was a fine artist and I studied music in college, and so it's kind of odd that I ended up being a pastor and sort of like the counseling thing sort of came out of that, because when you're a pastor, I mean, I did undergrad and then I went and got a master's degree and master of divinity, then I did doctoral studies at Ashland University. We're focusing in counseling and religious counseling, pastoral counseling. So it's a part of what you do. Mm. You know, you counsel people, you know, marriage counseling, what have you. But I found that all my skills sort of came together and that started to formulate, you know, and become something that I actually enjoy doing more than pastoring. So, and then this came along.
Yeah. So do you come from a religious background? It's like the pastor thing. Like, I think obviously it's a calling, but a lot of times it's, you know, people who have been in it.
My mom was a diehard church going person, you know, from Bannister Hill Baptist Church in South Boston, Virginia. Hey, but we didn't grow up like super religious or anything. I don't come from a line of pastors or nothing like that. No, I'm not like second, third generation or nothing. Mm-mm. Just me.
Just you.
Yeah.
Just you. Your mama's proud.
Right.
I mean, she is now. She'd be telling everybody, do you know that show, Marriage at First Sight?
Marriage.
Marriage
at First Sight. Yeah, and then they go off, talk, say, okay. And my mother's hilarious. She'll sit there. She'll just say, okay, uh-huh. Well, tell me more about the show. And she'll just say, uh-huh. Yeah, tell me about that pastor. And she said, mm-hmm, that's my son. And she just loves it. She loves it.
Aw, so it's great when you can make your parents proud.
Oh, my gosh. It's it makes it all worthwhile.
It really does. Yeah. Working. You still working on the AD?
Yeah, I'm still working. Hey, that's
I'm sure they're proud.
To make them proud. Yeah. See?
do we need a session, AD?
Okay. Sorry. What about the relationship sector of the counseling was intriguing to you and what kept you around it?
It's funny because I've been doing this for 20 some years and just in a more dedicated capacity, probably for the last 11, with my wife and I both joining forces and doing it. And I think that what's happened is because we are both second timers, this is both of our second marriage, we've learned a lot from what we've gone through and what we've experienced. And so now being able to see a couple who might think that their relationship is on the rocks because they're not communicating well, they're just not doing some of the basic stuff that they need to do, you know? And they feel like, oh, this, I'm giving up, this is done. I know this is not gonna work. So, I mean, to be able to go in there and kind of excavate their relationship, you know what I mean? Just get in there and dig around and help them to just see themselves. And then just start the reconciliation process. I mean, it's incredible to see that aha moment for couples.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's intriguing to me as well. Well, not that I'm an expert or I counsel anybody on anything, but seeing these type of things play out on TV, it's always, you know, human interaction is just interesting to me in general. Right. So I can understand why that getting into people's minds and making them realize something that it's not really hard to see.
Yeah.
Like a rewarding feeling.
Yeah, and I'm kind of a frustrated psychologist. I mean, I took psychology courses in college, and I loved it. But my professors were always like, "You ought to be a psychologist. You ought to major in. You ought to just get a degree." And I was like, "Nah." I'm in the back of my mind. I'm like, "Gosh, I should have been a psychologist. I should have gotten a PhD." You know?
I tell you what, though, you said that you try to control your facial expressions. Please don't. It is the best part. And, you know, it makes it so authentic and so real. It's like, oh, okay, all right.
I know I'm not crazy, but I just, okay.
I was right.
I know, that's funny. I never thought that would be a thing. I never thought that would be a thing. And people tell me, man, your facial expressions. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, and I'll sit there sometimes trying to be stone face. And somebody will say something. Absolutely.
And there you go. You know, seriously? What are you talking about? Oh, man. And then, yeah, it's great. So please never fix that because okay. That's what people.
I don't know if I could.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Right, it's a perfect problem to have.
It is. How do you coach couples into fixing their mistakes? You know, sometimes people can't see their mistakes. And I think a lot of times people listen in order to respond, not listen to them, right?
Yes.
And if you can't listen to hear someone and what they're going through, how do you coach them to do that and to fix their issues?
Yeah. And excellent question. You must be married.
Right. Married.
7 years. 7 years.
Yeah. It's you know, the toughest thing is to get people to pause, take their time, and actually hear what their mate is saying. Because you're absolutely right. When people listen to respond, we listen for rebuttal. Yeah. And that's one of the things we tell people, you know, we listening for rebuttal as opposed to listening for understanding and for resolution. And one thing that we do quite often is we have like what's called naked moments. And I teach couples, this technique that my wife and I started, where it's like, it's sort of a catchphrase, you know, I need a naked moment. And when you say that to your partner, what that means is that you then have to shut everything down. No cell phone, no TV, no anything. And you're locking in. And there are a couple of things you're focusing in, because we teach them also about using facial expressions, which, you know, I need to learn. Using, not rolling their eyes and not, okay. Not all that stuff, you know, not that. And actively listen, actually being in the moment, and let that person then just vomit their emotions. And I let them know that when someone wants a naked moment with you, they're exposing themselves, they're exposing their heart. All their emotional nerves are at an end, and they're completely vulnerable to you. And they're giving you a weapon. And you have a choice. You can either use that weapon to defend them, or you could use that weapon to destroy them. And so that whole vulnerability is just so important in listening. And for the listener, then their response is simply not to anything that would have hurt them or anything that would have offended them. Their response should be during those naked moments, okay, I hear you. Tell me more. I hear you. Tell me more. Okay, what am I missing? I want to make sure I understand. And it's a learned behavior. Listening is not easy. You got to learn how to listen. You got to learn how to hear someone. Because anyone can act like it. Anyone can sit there and say, hey, oh, okay, fine. So what you said is, and then just hone in on that one thing that had nothing to do with anything you were talking about.
That's usually how it goes.
And it's like, you missed the whole thing. You missed the entire conversation. All you heard was that one point. Well, what we do is that when we hear that point, we just forget everything else, and we sort of register that in the back of our minds, and we're waiting for you to finish so that we can bring that thing up, and you heard nothing else. So it's a learned response. It takes practice and takes just a lot of time where you're just nakedly listening to that person without responding and just learning how to shut the heck up.
That's true.
Whew. Sounds so simple. I promise you it does.
It does sound simple.
But it's easier said than done. But what, in response to that, because what problems are worth fixing in a relationship versus the ones, because from example from the show, like that we were watching this season, I feel like you all will push for any, you guys will push for any, situations, for any problems to be worked through. The only time it was really like it's over with is when somebody says, I don't want to be in this anymore. So besides somebody not wanting to be there, what kind of problems would you kind of go agree with somebody saying, okay, I just can't deal with this?
Yeah, if there's physical violence, if there's physical abuse, if there's extreme verbal abuse, and I believe that in every relationship there's going to be some verbal confrontation. There's going to be some, I don't want to say abuse, but there's going to be some verbage that offends you. Yes. I'm not going to say that anytime somebody says something to offend you, oh, that's verbal abuse, I'm out. But anytime there's abuse where I'm destroying you and you feel destroyed, you feel diminished, you feel as though you... that you've been sort of just subjugated to this little box, and you won't let me out of it. Whenever you get to that point, then it may be time for you to step back. Physical abuse, absolutely. Drug abuse, things of that nature. Mostly anything else, I believe, is workable. Even infidelity is workable.
On whose side? On their side, on my side. If I do it or if they do it, we're going to stick
I just let that pause for a second because I knew that.
You were waiting, huh? You
knew it was coming. Look, infidelity can be overcome.
Yeah.
It can be overcome. It takes a heck of a lot of work. It takes so much patience and so much forgiveness and so much personal sacrifice, just emotional sacrifice. But yeah, it caps. I know couples. I have couples that have overcome infidelity, and are thriving, doing incredibly well. But the onus of that reconciliation is on the person who did the offense, not the one who was offended. And I think that what happens quite often is not that people won't forgive. If you ask most, I mean, there are probably most people will say infidelity. Okay, no, I'm out of here. But if you ask people, what are the top three reasons that you would leave your spouse? Probably the majority of them, you would not find infidelity in the top three, probably not the top one. There are people who will say that, but most of them, the ones that I've encountered, let me say that, I can't speak for everybody in the world, but the ones that I've encountered, most of the time people will talk about, abuse, if I'm hit or something like that. But I've heard a lot of women say, I don't know, I would be hard, but, we'd have to work on that. It can be overcome, and I've seen it done.
Yeah, that's true. I think a lot of times not a lot of times, but in the past, I've seen, the older generation, and this happened in my family a couple of times, to where the man would go off and cheat, have a baby, and then bring that baby home. Mm-hmm. And that baby was raised by, the wife.
Yeah.
And they... Yeah. Still have kids, they still live.
What is it?
We'll get back into that. Because I don't know. It's like, it could go so many ways. It's like, is that acceptable? Like, should we accept that? Like, as women. And it happens a lot in our community. Not in our community, in our community, especially back in the day. And we are taught stick by your man.
Stick by your man.
Oh, yeah. Where is that line drawn?
Look, whenever there's infidelity, you have a choice to make. And that choice is whether or not you will forgive. Now, forgiveness comes in a number of different packages, okay? I can choose to forgive and leave. Or I can choose to forgive and stay. But it starts with forgiving. Now, way back in the day, they chose to forgive and stay because they realized, first of all, just economically, it made more sense.
Cheaper to keep her.
Hey, come on. Economically, it made more sense. Socially, divorce was just not acceptable under any circumstances. I mean, it was almost like a blight. You were seen as a failure. If you divorced. And most people, I think about my mother, who was married for 35 years before my father died and then remarried, years after that. But they were together through literal hell. I mean, a lot of bad, some crazy stuff that happened, but they stuck it out. They stuck it out. I saw them argue. I saw them reconcile. I saw, but they stuck it out.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would have left. They felt we have children, we have a home, we have a family, we have a unit that we must protect. And that was the thing. I think a lot of times, like nowadays, we ain't thinking about the unit, we ain't thinking about the kids, we ain't thinking about none of that. You hurt me, I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people put themselves first. I have noticed a shift in relationships when it comes to how they feel, mm-hmm. especially in my age range. I'm only in my 20s still. So a lot of people are speaking for themselves. I mean, hey,
you're a baby.
Oh yeah, I can handle myself as a newborn. Second, I'm just fine. But a lot of people do think about themselves. I don't see a lot of longevity. Like, I don't think any of my friends have been in a relationship past 2 years.
Yeah, yeah, and it's not a good precedent for marriage in the long term. I mean, the fact is, when you look at the baby boomer marriages. That did last for 20, 30, 40 years, 50s. Yeah, even you go the generation before that. But if you look at the generation Xers and and all those people, and not even to talk about the millennials. God, I don't know what's going to happen with y'all. But the generation, I swear, I got two millennial children. It's like, what? And the world is over. No. As we know it. No, but actually, no, I have a lot of hope for you guys. But as far as relationships are concerned, because you guys have access to more than any other generation has ever had.
It's overwhelming.
Information, as far as availability, just social availability, you guys can now look at people and pick up your phone and swipe left and swipe right as to whether or not you want to date them. I mean, it makes relationships very vacuous. It can make relationships very expendable.
Yeah.
That's true. That is very true.
Especially, but like I'm having this conversation often, like with my peer group and how disposable people are to each other now. You know, right. How people look at people.
Yeah.
How my friends look at people, how I know women to look at men in this day and age, how men look at women is disgusting. It honestly is.
Yeah. It's not, do you feel as though, okay, you're a millennial, do you feel as though you as a woman feel valued?
No.
Men? Now you answered that before I even finished the question. Jeez.
Yeah, no, because, like I said, I have this conversation all the time. I don't. You know, there's an expectation to look, be, act a certain kind of way from what they're scrolling past and seeing all day, but they want certain from what they're seeing or somebody's telling them that they want at home. And I don't fall in line with what you see on the internet. That's not my personality. I barely get on the internet versus, you know, how I am and, you know, finding somebody to really relate to me on all aspects. No. And then the type of person that I am to be valued. No, I do not feel like that.
Wow. And that's huge. Yeah. That's huge. You remember back in the day? No, you don't remember. But you know, to me, you probably don't remember either. But back in the 70s,
nope.
You know, it was different, man. I mean, even when you look at the music and the way guys, you know, it was like, you're my queen, you had this kind of, there was this kind of thing where you would exalt the woman and you would be like, you know, yeah. it was almost like woven into society, especially in Black society.
Yeah.
You know, where the Black woman was like, you know, through the 60s and 70s, and then all of a sudden things starts to shift, and it's like now you're becoming a hoe, or you're becoming a whatever, and your women are referred to in more derogatory terms, and it's like, I don't know, it's a very, very major shift in our sociological thinking of the value of women, and it's scary to me.
It's weird because I more so see it from the men's side. It's like I see the shift in men and how the men my age act, like the generation that I'm in, how they are perceived and how they act or perceived us, forcing us to be a certain way. Because I feel like a lot of women that I know don't want to be the way they are. You know, it's like, I don't want to act like this. It's just nobody likes me in that, you know, nobody values me. So I have to kind of fall under the norm of whatever is going on outside. But I'm not out
there. So I wonder though, because you said it's the men, but just take us for example. Every female is a boss and I don't need you and da 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 can also make the men shift to like, well, cool. Then if you ain't need me, you probably only need me for one thing. So I'm gonna just give you and treat you like that. You know what I mean? Because every woman now, if you talk about back in the day from the music, from the relationships, it was, like you said, it was a unit.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that the woman, everybody had their role. We talked about this in another interview we did. Everybody had their role, whether it was a man had a role, a woman had a role. It didn't have to be a woman's in the kitchen and a man's making the bacon.
Exactly.
It could have been something as simple as a man felt like a man.
Right. And
I think a lot of times we fail to do that for our men. And I think that was the shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's money. Because the funny thing is, when it comes to, it's something you said, as far as, you know, I'm a boss, I'm a boss bee.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and this whole thing, like, you know, I don't need no man or whatever, and all this other stuff. Look, I don't mind a woman being a boss. Just understand, I'm not your employee. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Be a boss. Be a boss, but understand. Hey, you're not dealing with a subordinate.
Yeah.
And I think that's how a lot of guys feel as though, because something I teach men specifically in dealing with in the relationships is that quite often women will respond based on their lack. They will respond based on the fact that they don't feel valued. So they'll take on that persona, like you were saying, as far as, you know, I'm a boss, yada, yada, et cetera. But you have to understand that men are naturally aggressors. Mm. We naturally are alpha. Well, you know, most men are naturally alpha. Okay. And so it's kind of like when a woman comes to us as an alpha, it freaks us out.
Throws you off, yeah.
Because we're like, wait a minute, she looked like a woman? She smelled like a woman? But she acted like a dude. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to do. Do I kiss her? Do I hit her? I don't know. And so, I think that there is something to be said for roles. And that doesn't mean that the woman has to be subordinated by no stretch of the imagination. Right. But, you know, I think that what's happening also is that, you know, for women to now advance themselves, which they should do, which they need to do, because women have been oppressed and depressed and repressed for so long. I think that what's happening is that in addition to that, there's a diminishing of the men, of black men. I ain't just talking about black men.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about black men, because we, you know, I ain't talking about, you know. But I think that I feel like sometimes I think the black men don't know where we are, or where we stand, or how to act, or how to respond. And it's a very confusing thing.
It is. But it really is a great topic, because I think it happens a lot in our community. And it's just that, you know, yeah, we'll get there though.
We will. I have it. Cause you know why we'll get there? Cause we've always gotten there. Yeah. We've always bounced back. We've always been resilient. We have never given in and just become destroyed, because it's something within our, I believe, within our DNA. We know how to survive.
Absolutely.
How to survive this.
Yeah, we've been surviving all our life.
Come on now.
Talking about like relationships back in the day, you know, divorce not being a thing. A lot of these shows, especially, you know, Married at First Sight, it's kind of, you know, it is arranged marriage. And statistics on, you know, divorce in the U.S. versus arranged marriage is astonishing.
It's crazy.
But do you believe that the arranged marriage works because they figure out how to make it work?
Yeah.
Or is it a cultural thing and they're not allowed to get divorced?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that there's definitely a greater taboo when it comes to divorce in an arranged marriage. And I think, I was talking to Dr. Pepper Schwartz, who's this brilliant sociologist at University of Washington. She's a professor there in sociology. And she was saying that, I think it's over roughly about 70 to 75% of marriages throughout the world are arranged. And I don't think that we really know that, you know, that the great majority of marriages are marriages that have been sort of put together. And they do have a much higher success rate, somewhere in the 90s.
Yeah.
As opposed to Western romantic marriages, which is now, we know, over 50% divorce.
Yeah.
And so I believe that the difference is when arranged marriages occur, that they're doing more than just marrying the person. They're marrying families, they're marrying cultures, they're marrying, and they're building legacy. They're building something for their future. And that's what's in the mindset. That's why they choose your partner. That's why they said, hey, look, you know, little, you know, Amani over here is from a great family. Her father is the, you know, CEO of this and that, and you know, Tony, your family is, you know, is so-and-so, so we're going to put you two together so you can sort of perpetuate the success of both families. We don't look at it that way. Mm-mm. We find somebody, oh, I love him. Oh, I love her. Right? And and so then we're going to get married. It's like, what's that song? Who was it? Was it Bruno Mars? It says, I don't know if it was Bruno or not. It's a beautiful night, looking for something dumb to do. Hey, baby, I think I want to marry you. Yeah, have you heard? You remember? Is it just me or y'all don't know that song?
I feel like I've heard that song before, but
it's a beautiful night. We're looking for something dumb to do. Yeah. I mean, the whole idea is that marriage is very, it's just like, hey, let's get married. But there's no thought in it. There's no no idea of what you're actually doing, of you trying to build anything. Yeah. And so, arranged marriage, I believe, can be a much more stable type situation. I mean, if you look at the biblicals from a Bible perspective, you know, from the Judeo-Christian perspective, marriages were arranged. Mm-hmm. You know, people back in the, you know, Hebrews and whatever, they you would never marry somebody from a different tribe. It was not out of your tribe. So you would, you know, they would find someone together to perpetuate the existence and the prosperity of their particular tribe. So it's a lot deeper than just romantic marriages.
Yeah, I agree with that. I hate that song by Jagged Edge. We ain't getting no younger, so we might as well do it.
Yeah, oh my, what is that? Meet me at the altar in your white dress.
We might as well do it because we ain't.
Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You see, I was talking about Jagged Edge. Yeah, that was actually what I was thinking about.
I hate that song. That song is so.
It's stupid. A stupid song.
Why get that to altar in the white dress? I feel like I'm gonna be the one in that situation.
You need an arrangement. Married at First Sight is auditioning for Atlanta.
We are auditioning for Atlanta next.
Don't say that. I thought you already came here.
No,
we did. Yeah, we did. We were in New York the first two seasons.
I remember that Atlanta one because I saw the girl. I remember. I don't remember her name, but I saw her before.
Yeah, Vanessa. Yeah,
Vanessa. That's her. Yep, I remember.
Yeah. She's a good girl.
So when it comes to arranged marriages and your support, I'm guessing. Yeah, for the show, being that you're one of the hosts for the show. Is there a formula that you believe works when it comes to the approach of how the show operates? Like, you know, there's a certain process that they go through weekly, the honeymoon, getting married, moving in, discussing finances and stuff like that. But do you believe when it comes to an arranged marriage and how you all present it on the show, that there is a formula or something that you really try to get them to hone in on or focus on to make the marriage work?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that because we have, I think when you're looking at the show, you just see two people that we've chosen to be married at first sight. And they are walking down the altar, walking down the aisle. She's walking down the aisle and he's up there and he's like, wow, they put these people together. You know, why? Why did we choose these people? Yeah. There is a serious process first in choosing them, probably about a 2 to 3 month process in matching. So it's not just, you know, that girl's pretty or that guy is handsome. Yeah. No. You start by doing a 75 question questionnaire just to apply. And then after the application, you have to do all 75 questions. And then after the application, we have to do a 575 question questionnaire after the 75. So totally, you're doing probably about 650 questions. Because we compile all that data. We compile all that data, and then we weed out people. For the DC season, we started with probably 2,500 people. Maybe 2,500, 3,000 people. And we weeded it down by people who were married, people who had been married, people maybe who had kids, people who were maybe aged out of the demographic were not old enough, people who had maybe ridiculous expectations. So by the time, I mean, you would be surprised. You would be surprised at how ridiculous people can be. And so after all that, by the time we come in, there's about roughly about 100 people that we're interviewing. Mm-hmm. And we take an entire weekend to interview those 100 people, the three of us do. And so we're actually sitting down with each individual person. There's 25 people a day for 4 days. Wow. And you're talking roughly about 30-minute interview per person. So it's like, holy Moses, it's a lot. Ooh. So then after that, we do background checks, criminal background checks. We do psychological evaluations. Everyone sits with a psychologist, and they have to pass. And there's actually a psychological testing that they take. And they actually have to do that. And we run a whole massive background package. We do a social media scan. We do a health evaluation to make sure that they're healthy and no one has any major stuff like HIV or, herpes or anything like that. Mm. And then after that, then we sit down and we personally interview them. And we have one set of interviews, then another set of interviews. Then we weed them out and come down to these last 10 with a few alternate couples that we feel that the top ones and then a few more. And then we have to wait and see if they don't have any major life changes that causes them to drop out. Mm. And so it's a lot. So when people say stuff like, well, how come you all don't find interracial couples and all that? Look, we can only deal with who comes. And we're not going to do that.
We had a couple of questions up for people to ask you. And I know one of the things was about the process because of the result of the show this season. So you guys, it's not his fault. It's not his fault.
People
got to take their own crazy, y'all.
There are so many ears and eyes involved in this process. It's not just us, not just the three of us. Our producers, our cameramen, our sound people, our PAs, everybody, we're asking because we often will see people and talk to them. But then you have to understand that when we're not talking to people, our assistant producers or our PAs, they might be hearing stuff. So then we'll say, okay, fine. What did you hear during this group? What are they saying when they're walking out of the halls? Because we might have our mind on somebody, but then somebody will come in and say, this person said he can't wait to do it because this is really going to help his business. Mm. And so then we're like, oh, nope, that's not going to work. It's not going to work because we don't want you there for that reason.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, most of the questions was like, oh, where were the experts? Oh, what about the process? Psych evaluations. Did they not know he was crazy? Did they? it's like all these things, that people.
That's real crazy. If you can hide it for a couple of months, if they have to stay narrow like that, that's crazy.
And here's the thing: I don't know if they're hiding it, because I honestly believe that. Okay, let's take for instance. I won't disparage anybody's personality or character or anything, but let's take. For instance, I don't know, pick somebody, Zach.
Zach, okay?
Honestly, on the serious tip, if I'm just talking to Zach, like if as many times as I have, Zach's a good guy.
He seems like
it. Zach's a nice guy.
He's a nice guy.
He wasn't ready to be married. And he did everything that we thought he should do, and he did everything that he thought he should do to convince us and everyone that he was. And I don't think it's a matter of whether or not he's crazy or has any issues. I think that when the rubber hit the road, he was like, this is real.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, it's married at first sight. Right. Okay, this ain't Netflix and chill at first sight. This is marriage. So that was how we did it. And then he started, doing stupid stuff like calling other people and all that ridiculous
stuff. That was so random. That really threw me off. Like, wait, you guys have a couple of weeks. You literally couldn't get it right for a couple of weeks, y'all?
Okay. Yeah. In the 8 weeks, and here's the thing. And, with all due respect to all our brave contestants for letting us, come into their lives. the cameras are actually on you for 40 to 50 hours a week, literally. Mm. There's a camera that's actually in the apartment in the main common area that, you know, that just stays there. So you are, and everyone's warned, everyone's told that you're going to be just documented all the time, except at work. We don't go in your bedroom. We don't go in the bathroom. Whatever you do in there is your business. But outside of that, you're going to be documented. That's what this is. But when you have a camera in front of you that long, you forget it's there.
Yeah, I know.
You forget. and the real you, you said, I know.
Yeah, because Davina always records me when I'm not looking. And then she's always like, hey, you remember this? And she'll send me a video of like me talking to myself or something like that. So.
Right, yeah, yeah. You forget. Yeah, you become you know, camera blind. It's like,
yeah, I think you forget, but I think you also realize that you've never done this before.
Right.
So people realize whether it's the relationship, because when, you know, a lot of people said that this season was a failure, and, you know, I disagree. Again, I didn't start watching till this season, but I think each one of the contestants learned something about themselves to where they now can go off and have successful relationships, which to me is a success. I'm sure Michael never looked at himself as having a problem, you know, because it was something he never faced. No one's ever called him on his BS like Mika did. Right. And I'm sure Mika never knew. Everybody love Mika.
Mika's the best. In real life, Mika's the absolute truth.
Yeah, she is.
She just is.
Sure, you know, with Mika, she never thought of vulnerability the way Michael made her view it. Because she never had to be that person. And if you want to go down the line, I think each one of them, whether you fell in love with them or not, the success was them learning.
Yeah.
Who they actually was in a real committed relationship and being able to fix, change, or say, hey, this is who I am. We either gonna make it work or we not.
Yeah. And that is so, so true. And when you talk to all of them, you know, I've talked to all of them since the airing of the show, and everyone is so happy for the experience. I mean, they're so happy that they were given the opportunity. They're happy that they had the chance to just be a part of it. And it's just such a blessing, you know, for them. And for us, you know, because Mindy, I think, said that the kind of person that she is now and the kind of person she's going to be in a relationship is just going to be incredible. That's awesome.
Yeah. I think we saw the biggest growth from Mindy than anyone else on the show.
Oh my God. Yeah.
When she first came on, it was like
timid,
self-conscious, which is everybody is the self-conscious, you know, you question yourself. And
right.
I think she realized what she was trying to get from Zach, which was, for him to accept her, she then learned how to accept and appreciate who she was. And that was so amazing for me to see. Like,
yeah.
I think even her demeanor on the last show, like, was different from when she came on. Yeah, like, it was just different.
You know what?
She just seems the most relaxed. Like, hey, I went through it. I understand it wasn't for me. I'll try later. Like, I like that. So how do you all measure the success on the show? Is it based off of who stays married and how long, or is it just who says yes on decision day?
No, I'm sorry. You all can see me, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. My screen all of a sudden went little, and I don't know how to get it big again. But anyway, no, as far as success on the show, we measure success in two ways. Of course, by, you know, the people who stay together. We want everybody to stay together. For the people who say that the show was not a success, well, Jessica and Austin would say differently. You know, they believe it was an incredible success. Mindy thinks it's a success because she's learned so much about herself. And I think Davina said it just perfectly, that our successful measure of the show has to do with whether or not these people have become better, whether or not they now can go on to be to be viable human beings and to be great partners, you know, with someone else, even if not with this. Now, the downside to that is, and it's one that can't be avoided, is when you act a complete nut on camera, that stuff don't go away. And so any subsequent relationship, people gonna Google you. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna find out about just how crazy you may have been. And so, but you know, even with that, you know, I think everyone still appreciates it. And I think the only thing unsuccessful that I've seen is when someone leaves and they have refused to participate, they refuse to completely engulf themselves in the process, and they've left bitter. And that's only maybe happened just, I don't know, a couple times.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I see people like, for instance, Jeffy and Shawnese from...
they are my favorite, okay? That's why I started telling people to start watching, because their story was just so sweet. Like, oh my God.
An incredible story.
Yeah.
Incredible story. Because, I mean, if you really look at it, Shawnese and Jeffy actually was ready to check out on a number of occasions. he was ready to check out, and he was like, you know, no, I don't love her. I don't know how to do this and all that. And as long as he was telling me, I don't know how, I can deal with it.
Yeah.
As long as he's saying, you know, I don't know how to be married, I don't know how to be a husband, I can live with it. But the moment you think you know how, and then you're choosing to leave, that's a different ball game. So they stuck in it. He actually started looking at, you know, the benefit that she brought to his life. And they are incredible now.
Yeah.
They are a story for the ages, man. They are.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I think that's probably when I started, like, telling everybody, like, you need to watch this show. Like, it is so cool.
Yeah. They are awesome. They're awesome.
Do you think marriage is something that everyone should try to achieve?
Marriage?
You look stressed already. I can't cancel this
one. Oh, coming with the question. You know what? I believe that marriage is, from my perspective, yes. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's an awesome thing. It's been good to me. You know, I feel that anyone who wants a partner, who doesn't want to do life alone, who wants to have someone who feels as though they matter, that the smallest things in their life matter, someone who feels as though, I mean, they know little ridiculous things about you that nobody else knows. If you want that, then yeah. And if you want it in a committed environment, in a committed situation where this person has pledged and shown some sign of pledging by marrying you and legally connecting themselves to you, then yeah, marriage is for those people. There are some people out there who probably will never be married because they don't want to be committed. You know, so yeah. I'm sorry. There are all kinds of noises going on over here.
Oh, it's okay. We understand.
I'm gonna try it one day and let you guys know how I go.
You know, no. Marriage is not something that you try one day. This is not like caviar. Okay. It's not like calamari. You know, I'm gonna try it.
Try it out.
You just gonna dip your toe in it.
Dip my
toe. Right. I'll try.
It on this side. See what all the hype is about. So I'm just fine. I'll put some time in. I promise.
All right. So we just have a couple more questions. I think two of my biggest ones. Well, first, how do you care for someone's emotions when you are trying to deal with your own?
Oh, this is the selflessness of marriage. Yeah, it's tough, man. And I think that question is probably where people of it's sort of like the beginning of most arguments is when you have someone else who needs you to care for their emotions, but you need your own emotions cared for. And I kind of compare it to this. Some people, I think we all rather, are born with our own cup of love, our own cup of emotions. And it's like, my job in my relationship is to make sure I fill my partner's cup while mine is being filled also. And if it's done right, we're filling each other's cup simultaneously. Unfortunately, what happens quite often is one cup is being filled while the other cup is being leaked out. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I'm filling, but nothing is coming back into mine. And I think that's where the conflict comes. I don't mind caring for my wife's emotions because I know she cares for mine, because I know that if at any point I need her to be empathetic, I need her to be compassionate, she will be. But I think that what happens quite often is that we feel as though it's almost like a timing thing. We feel as though when I am caring for your emotions, I need you to care for mine, which is not always the case. I can care for your emotions and not have mine cared for as long as I know at some point I'm going to be cared for. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, you know, we're so afraid to give ourselves to other people because we're afraid we're not going to, you know, be poured back into. So it does take a lot of selflessness. You have to seriously evaluate whether or not I'm being loved like I need to be loved. And, you know, everybody talks about love languages and what have you. By the way, I think there are more than five love languages. But everybody talks about love languages. And we talk about, you know, finding out what your love language is, which is kind of, you know, jiving with what you're saying as far as loving someone and taking care of their emotions, loving them how they need to be loved. But the secret in finding out your love style, your love language, is not in just finding out yours, but then me coming out of myself to love you like you want to be loved. If my love language is physical touch and yours is words of affirmation, then I don't need to love you with physical touch.
Mm.
That's not getting it. Now, I say, yeah, this is my love language, so I'm doing everything. I hold your hand. But that's not doing it for me.
Yeah.
I bring home flowers. Well, that's not doing it for me. You know, I work every day. Well, that's not doing it for me. Why? Because that is not how I want to be loved. That is not my emotional well that needs to be filled.
Mm.
What I need to do is come out of myself, figure out what is it that you need to feel like you are being valued, you're being respected, you're being made whole by me. And then come out of my head, come out of myself and simply do that. It becomes mechanical, but you have to do it. Just do what the other person wants.
So is it your job to figure it out, or is it my job to tell you?
It's your job to tell me. I can't figure nothing out. I'm not a mind reader. Now, what I do believe is that a man should study his wife, that a woman should study her husband or relationships, wherever you're in. But I believe that you should study each other. Now, that means that when I pick up on a certain cue, if I pick up that this is how she needs to be loved. Oh, this is what, okay, fine. I need to put that into my mental, you know, RAM and understand that this is what she wants and this is what you do. I have a friend who does that. God, he drives us crazy because he's always doing these things for his wife and making all the rest of us look bad because he knows how she needs to be loved and he goes out of his way to do all that. I mean, we all do it to a certain extent, but he's just overboard. But the thing is, he studied her, he knows what she wants, and he simply does that. And when you do that, the other person will say, oh, wow, I feel safe now to respond. I can give you whatever you want. Think about it. If somebody gave you exactly what you needed, when you needed it, how you needed it, how willing are you to give back?
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. And that safety thing is huge.
Oh, my God. You got to feel safe. If I'm pouring into you, I need to know I'm pouring into something that's going to protect what I'm giving it.
Yep. That's huge. That safety is a really big thing. AD always got questions about relationships.
Because it's like my mind is just so all over the place. It's just an interesting topic.
It is. I love relationships.
Oh, this is a good one. Sorry, looking at my notes. Do you think someone who has had a bad relationship with a parent or a guardian have a successful relationship with someone?
Okay, say that again.
Do you believe that someone who has not the best relationship with one of their parents, like a man with his mother, woman with their father,
or guardian,
are they able to carry on successful relationships?
Well, if they were not able to carry on successful relationships, that would probably eliminate the majority of people. Because God knows, I don't know. I mean, having an awesome relationship with your parents is probably more the minority than the majority. But that's unfortunate. Just in my experience, I've seen most people have some hard times with their parents. But what I believe that we learn how to love and how to be loved based on what we see. I believe that a girl learns how the kind of man she wants to marry from the man that's in her mother's life, whether it's her father or boyfriend or whatever. But by her mother's, by how she, and she also learns the kind of woman to be by observing her mother, and vice versa. The son learns that by observing his father and by observing his mom. He learns the kind of woman to marry, learns the kind of man he wants to be. So if all I've seen is dysfunction, if all I've seen is inadequate relationships and unfulfilling relationships and complaining, and if that's all I've seen, then yes, it's a natural thing for me to carry that into my relationship. Now, can that be overcome? Absolutely. In every relationship, though, we do carry that baggage. We carry the baggage of our parents, what our parents have done. And that has taught me an incredible lesson in dealing with my own kids, you know, all three of mine, you know, that I have to present to them the absolute best model that I can of what a husband looks like, of what a father looks like, and what a happy marriage looks like. Because I mean, as I said, you know, because you know, my wife and I are doing this for the second time, the first time around, I had two boys and now my wife, she had a daughter. So we've come together and brought our kids together. And now my goal has been to show both all three of them what a unified and happy marriage looks like. Cause neither of us had that in our previous lives. Mm-hmm. So, when they go on to be married, none of them are yet, but when they go on to be married, my expectation is that they will take some of that positivity with them. Will there be things that they have to learn on their own? Absolutely. Yeah, but there is definitely a causal effect between our parental relationships and our romantic relationships.
I can see that.
You all right, AD?
I can see that. It makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, if you really think about your parents, we tend to become our parents after, whether you like your parents or not, we tend to become them.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, Jesus. I saw a girl once who was, a lady who was cursing, it was on a video, she was cursing out a nail salon or something or another, and her son was there. And the way the mother was talking to women, to those attendants there, and then I saw the son jump in, and he started cursing these women out. I mean, vile cursing. I mean, he was saying stuff and posturing like he was going to hit him. And she was like, just encouraging him. And then said, don't you touch my son and all the. Do you realize what kind of damage you're doing to that boy?
Yeah.
This 12, 13-year-old boy, he's learning his cues from you. That's the kind of woman he's going to attract in his life. Because he's saying, my mom's behavior is justified. Yeah. And if that behavior is justified, then I want to see that behavior. Now, when he gets that in a relationship, he's not going to want it.
Yeah.
But that's what he's going to go after.
That's what he's going to go after.
Yeah. Yeah, I, you know, Relationships are an interesting thing. You know, you go through these relationships, you learn from them. I think communication is one of the hardest things to have in a relationship. And I think when people think of communication, it's like, oh, we talk all the time. We tell each other everything. But it's not just that. I think it's, you know, communicating and listening, like we said before, with the open mind, open heart. Right. And yeah, this was amazing. I'm sure we got like a million more questions, but we're not going
to. My brain is scrambled. I do, but yeah, this was amazing.
And we're awesome. We will do it again. I promise you. And hopefully face to face now that we're all in Atlanta.
Absolutely. This is a lot of fun.
This, we try to make it a lot of fun. And then when this whole thing lifts and we're all comfortable going outside, we have to go out to dinner. It's on you two.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I love it. I love it.
I'm there.
That's right. You said when out, like my daughter said, when outside is open again.
Yeah, when outside, when we off punishment.
Right.
I know, right. She said outside is closed. Wow.
I'll take this punishment, though. I'm not
going. I'm not tripping. I am not.
Neither. Even if they open it up, I'm good.
Oh, yeah. They said we should be in the house until June 8th. That's when I'm going to stay in this house.
I'm in the house until August 8th.
Until August 8th. Well, you know what? I got to travel, and I got to do some things, all right? So,
I got to go outside.
I'm going to go outside and play.
This is perfect.
Man, thank you so much for this. Really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
We enjoy so much watching you on TV. You know, don't change a thing. I love you and your wife on live.
That's my girl.
She should have her own show.
I'm going to tell her you said that. She's crazy and all get out, but I love her.
And she should have her own show. Please tell her we said hello.
We'll do it. We're definitely going to have to connect. We're in the A, girl. We got to do this.
We're all here. So, yeah, this was awesome. This was awesome. Do you want to close us out with song since you said you sing? Like, we about to make him take off his glasses on us. Girl,
look how he looked over the top. Like,
right. Girl, man, but
I know we ain't gonna do that.
It's worth a try. Oh man, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sure will. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Bye bye.